DCU is proud to sponsor this conversation from Boston Public Radio. More at dcu.org.
Under the radar means hearing about things you didn't know you needed to know until you hear them.
It's a serious look.
Hear about the issues that don't get the attention they deserve.
Under the radar doesn't get caught up in the day-to-day.
Surfacing issues that are not talked about in mainstream media.
I think it's something that connects us to each other.
Under the radar is all about discovery.
I can be guaranteed voices I haven't heard before.
But also the questions.
Under the radar is one step ahead.
I'm Callie Crossley. This week on Under the Radar with Callie Crossley, today, Massachusetts' new distracted driving bill finally takes effect, meaning drivers will no longer be able to use any handheld devices behind the wheel. This comes after years of persistent campaigning from advocacy groups and supporters. But despite this legislative milestone, the real work to make distracted driving a centerpiece of public safety dialogue begins now. That's why a group from the Harvard T.H. Chan School's Center for Health Communication is embarking on a national ad campaign to get drivers' eyes off their phones and on the road. Later in the show, African-American artist Jacob Lawrence set out to paint an inclusive history of the United States in his narrative series, The American Struggle. Now this little-recognized and little-seen series is drawing crowds at Salem's Peabody Essex Museum. But first, joining me in the studio, Jay Winston, Associate Dean for Health Communications at the Harvard T.H. Chan School of Public Health. Hello, Jay.
Glad to join you.
I'm glad to have you. Emily Stein, President of Safe Roads Alliance. Welcome back, Emily.
Thanks, Callie.
And Ryan McMahon, Vice President of Insurance and Government Affairs at Cambridge Mobile Telematics, a smartphone telematics analytics provider. Welcome, Ryan.
Thank you.
I want to start by reminding people what's at stake. Let's take a listen to an interview with Allison Lowell, the mother of Gabriella Lowell, who was killed by a driver looking at his cell phone in June of 2018 in Massachusetts. What did you think when you heard what he was doing? I mean, that this was the cause of her death.
Anger. I can't even just beyond that, beyond hurt. And so upset that he didn't have any respect for anybody else's lives, because that was a choice. Picking up his phone was a choice. This wasn't an accident. It was a choice.
What do you say to people who say, it's just a couple seconds? You know, I can look down and keep driving.
It's not a couple seconds. I lost my daughter within 1 second of him looking at his phone. 1 second matters. A half a second matters. And it's something that needs to stop.
That was Allison Lowell, the mother of Gabriella Lowell. She lost her daughter in June of 2018 by a distracted driver. She spoke to us right before the time before this last successful attempt to get the bill pushed through that is now pushed through, approved, and effective as of now, Emily. And you know, like she, what the human cost of this is.
Yeah. I keep saying the biggest tragedy of doing this work on legislation is meeting new families. You know, whether it's this past year or 5 or 6 years ago, and people keep coming forward with saying, my daughter was killed while walking on the sidewalk. I've continued conversations with Allison since that interview, and it doesn't get easier. You know, her daughter was her only child, and I will never stop thinking about what Allison has lost and what all of us have lost.
And you lost your father, to be clear.
Yeah. This April, it'll be 9 years since my dad's been gone. And time heals in some way. But, you know, when you still see drivers just oblivious to the road, it hurts. And it also is like, okay, we still need to keep working. And we need to keep working really hard. And so I'm really proud and admire all the families and survivors that we've worked with the past several years because, you know, we've formed this team and keep each other going.
And now that the hands-free legislation, Massachusetts was the last New England state to get on board with this, is in place, are you breathing a sigh of relief? Where are you?
Well, I have to say, being at the bill signing was such a special moment. I was there with my family. I was there with my kids who never got to meet their grandfather. My mom made it. It's just a really big day to celebrate alongside the other advocates and the legislators and other leaders who helped pass this. And then the day after was the big drop. And it felt like, you know, the day after Christmas, where you're just like, okay, well, now what? And it took a little bit of time to, you know, kind of gather myself together and say, okay, well, now the work really begins. And so we've, you know, been extremely busy the last 2 months with, you know, outreach, both to law enforcement, because they're going to be the ones enforcing the law, and district attorneys and judges and state agencies. And it's exciting. Everybody seems to be working together to see how can we creatively and effectively enforce this law.
And so the outreach is why, Jay Winston, you're here, because you are starting a new campaign soon, which is focusing on distracted driving. Now, before you give us a little insight about what's happening there, I want to remind people the work of your department that you've done in the past. Pretty much, you put designated driver on the map as a term and as a concept, and something that Americans have really embraced. 30 years ago, nobody was talking about this, and then it became something that people paid attention to. Let's listen to a clip from an episode of Cheers that was part of the Hollywood Designated Driver campaign.
All right, fellas, do me a favor. You guys have had a few drinks. Sit down. Let me buy you some coffee.
Thanks anyway, Sam, but everything's under control. Pete hasn't had a thing to drink all night. He's our designated driver.
Oh, I'm glad to hear it. That's a good idea, Pete.
I'm not the designated driver. I thought you were.
No, I'm not the designated driver. What about you, Mark?
I'm with Sam. I think we ought to try it sometime.
Wait right here. I'm going to call you a cab.
Now, that's the work of your department, trying to get this concept across in a way that was acceptable to people, that they could hear about and understand. Just want to point out that by 1998, a Roper poll found that the majority of adults who drank had been a designated driver or been driven home by one. That's how much that's a part of who we are. But tackling distracted driving is your next big deal. You've done other things in between. And talk to me about why this is different, if it is, in terms of your approach.
Yeah, it's much tougher than drunk driving, dealing with distracted driving. Drunk driving is an episodic occurrence. If you're out on a Friday evening, it's not 24/7, 365. I mean, it's almost an unnatural act in today's culture when you step into your car to set aside your entire professional, personal, and social universes that the rest of the day you're connected to and all but addicted to. And so it's going to require a multifaceted effort. The new law in Massachusetts is, I think, a very important step forward, in particular because it renders much more readily enforceable the anti-texting law that's been on the books for a long time. Because now if a police officer sees you holding the phone, that per se is the offense. The officer does not have to prove what it is that you were doing with that phone. It used to be quite legal up until to enter GPS coordinates onto your phone while you were driving. All of that will go away, so the enforcement will be much more effective. But until we change social norms, there's no stigma connected with distracted driving. You know, I'll go to a cocktail party and someone will ask what I'm working on, and I'll tell them, and they'll look up at the ceiling and roll their eyes and say, yeah, I'm probably one of the worst offenders. I know I'm going to have to change. They wouldn't do that about drunk driving today. And so law enforcement by itself cannot solve the problem. It's going to require cultural change. And that's why we want to engage the Hollywood community again to model social norm and expectation to change the culture. And that's really at the heart of what we're going to try to achieve.
Now, Jay Winston of the T.H. Chan School of Public Health, one of the things that you emphasize is that people get away with it routinely, distracted driving, and so it actually reinforces bad behavior.
That's right. Especially young people in public opinion polls and in focus groups, they say, "Yeah, but I'm not the problem. You know, I'm a good driver, and I'm great at multitasking. And I may be scared to death of the other drivers on the road," which is an interesting insight from the public opinion research, because we can take advantage of that, which we can talk about perhaps in a minute. But they don't believe they're the problem. So they will watch these highly produced video recreations of fatal distracted driving crashes in slow motion, and they'll watch it by the millions the way they would a scary movie. But they're looking at that screen and saying, "But that's not me, because I can handle it." So how do we break through that? And each time that they get away with it, because causing a distracted driving crash is actually a very low probability event. Until you've done suddenly great harm, you've probably gotten away with it hundreds of times before that, until your time came up. And so each time that you get away with it, it further reinforces your belief that you can handle it. So that's part of the complex problem that we're up against in tackling this problem.
So the solutions, so to speak, because the solution involves all of us and our behavior, which is a big lift, is really to think about various interventions as you are thinking about this campaign to get people thinking about distracted driving in a different way. As you pointed out, hasn't worked to look at the videos, hasn't worked to hear the stories of Allison Lowell and her daughter and Emily Stein and her father, hasn't worked for folk to feel as though they should be ashamed of the behavior. It's not going to happen to me. So how do you interrupt that, which is really, it's difficult, it seems to me.
Right. Two different ways, I think. I think it's primarily going to take a combination of culture change and technological change. The technology is what's driving the problem, but will also have a lot to do with managing it and controlling it. On the technology side, there, you know, you can minimize the effects, the adverse effects of distracted driving with lane centering technology in vehicles and forward collision prevention technologies and blind spot detection, so that even if a driver is distracted, technology as almost a co-pilot can intervene and help prevent a crash from occurring in the first place. You can also change expectations through financial incentives that we'll, I think, talk about a little bit later. But on the cultural side, the interesting insight from the survey research is that about 75% of drivers say they're scared to death of other drivers on the road, as I indicated. And that provides an opportunity, because we can flip it around and say, instead of saying, "Don't be a distracted driver," because they don't think that they're the problem anyway, "Be an attentive driver." And the promise of attentive driving is it will help to provide you with a degree of safety and protection against the other drivers on the road. So it's all about scanning for surprises and keeping your guard up and expecting the unexpected. And you can't simultaneously protect yourself through attentive driving and also be distracted. So the distracted would take care of itself if we can focus in on the risk from other drivers. The other potential intervention is to mobilize passengers, including children. You know, kids were very important change agents around tobacco prevention, tucking at their parents' shirt sleeves.
Okay,
There you go.
Yeah, well, right. My sister and I, my parents stopped cold turkey. We said, "We can't take it anymore. Stop it."
Precisely. So kids can do that if they're in the passenger seat around distracted driving. And you want to model that behavior through social media and through YouTube videos and the like, and to promote the idea and provide the language and the skills and the motivation to speak up and to intervene and to say something. And I think Emily will have something to say about that later on, too.
Okay. That's Jay Winston. He's Associate Dean for Health Communications at the Harvard T.H. Chan School of Public Health. Ryan McMahon, Jay has mentioned technology, and you're right at the heart of this technology. Your firm has done a lot of work looking at just this issue. Tell us what you know about distracted driving from the data that you've collected.
Sure, absolutely. And thank you. And I just want to say at a moment, the work that Emily and Jay are doing is commendable. This is a very challenging issue. And Cambridge Mobile Telematics was founded out of research out of MIT and getting data from phones to determine, actually, the first launch of the program was to identify potholes in the city of Boston with accelerometers on phones. And that's before smartphones became ubiquitous. And now to the point where, you know, smartphones have actually become the problem to a certain extent. So our technology is used by mobility providers, rideshare companies, insurance companies to essentially build a safer ecosystem for drivers. And the way that that is done is by looking at the sensors on the phone, the accelerometer, the gyroscope, the GPS, to determine how someone is driving, whether that be they're going too fast for an area relative to the speed limit, whether they're taking corners too fast, whether they're starting and stopping too quick, too many hard braking events. But probably the most fascinating thing that the data reveals is actually around distracted driving. Because distraction is one of those things, especially with smartphone distractions, very hard to quantify. If you look at the main data sources for accidents that come from the National Highway Transportation Safety Agency and others, they're looking at drivers from fixed positions and they're trying to determine who's looking at their phone at various points. Maybe it's at stoplights, et cetera. But as Jay mentioned, distracted driving is not something that happens in one moment. It's not episodic. It's around us all the time. And in fact, our data, we have about 50 active programs that use apps that run on smartphones around the world. And our data shows that roughly a third of all trips, a third of all drives, have some significant phone distraction on them. So these are individuals that have our technology on their phone, that they have typically an incentive for some reason, whether it be a lower insurance premium or they're entered into a contest or they get rewards as a result of safe driving. But for this group, roughly a third, and we're talking tens, hundreds of millions of trips that we analyze. And just this past year, we actually got a little bit deeper into this issue to try to look at how long is phone distraction happening. And when I say phone distraction, we're talking in a limited context. We're talking about someone going more than 10 miles an hour. We're talking about them holding the phone and interacting with it while the screen is on. So we're not talking about someone talking on the phone. We're not referencing when it's mounted, although we just recently started to provide more analysis on that issue because the laws have changed behavior where we have people that stop holding their phone and instead they move their phone to a fixed position and interact with it. But when someone is holding their phone and using it while they're going more than 10 miles an hour, in this case, in the data that we're talking about, then we see distraction happening for about 23 seconds on average. So it's heartbreaking, the first story that you played when the individual is talking about it a couple of seconds. I mean, it's not a couple of seconds for a lot of reasons. Too much of our technology has driven our attention. As Jay mentioned, our life is really centered around our phone. And unlike any time that you've had that level of capability that makes our lives connected. But that doesn't stop at the car door. And when people are engaged in their driving, if we stopped talking for 23 seconds, everyone would, you know, everyone would think their radio is broken.
That's right.
Right? So think about how long that is for your eyes to be off the road. And I'm not saying their eyes are off the road for all 23 seconds, but they're holding their phone and interacting it for that.
Or their attention is diverted, which is what we're talking about, however it's happening.
Exactly.
So two big takeaways. A third of all of the millions of people that you've surveyed or looked at the data for, and 23 seconds. I think we need to keep that in our mind. That's my guest, Ryan McMahon, Vice President of Insurance and Government Affairs at Cambridge Mobile Telematics. If you're just tuning in, this is Under the Radar with Callie Crossley. I'm Callie Crossley. And here with me are Harvard T.H. Chan School's Jay Winston, Safe Roads Alliance's Emily Stein, and as I mentioned, Cambridge Mobile Telematics, Ryan McMahon. We're discussing a new national ad campaign from the Harvard T.H. Chan School's Center for Health Communication, Tackling Distracted Driving. Now, I don't know if this is one of your clients, Ryan, but I noted this State Farm ad. I'm going to play it now. This is State Farm's latest safe driving incentivization campaign.
You going for a big drive safe and save discount?
Yep.
Using the app? I've been quite vigilant.
Easy, easy.
But you're in labor.
Don't mess with my discount!
Okay, now that's one that's all about speeding, which is just very specific. Here's another one from Allstate featuring Tina Fey, which seems to be more focused on distracted driving, though they never use the words. So let's take a listen.
I'm your 70-pound St. Bernard puppy, and my lack of impulse control is about to become your problem.
No, come on. I saw you eating poop earlier. Hey!
My focus is on the road, and that's saving me cash with DriveWise. Who's the dummy now?
So I assume probably one of those is using some of what you're talking about in terms of trying to get people to be incentivized to not be distracted by the dog, the speeding, and everything else.
Yeah, I think that this is the really interesting thing, is the insurance industry didn't really have the ability before the technology to understand who was a quote-unquote safe driver and who is not. They look at corollaries in actuarial tables to look at similarities of groups, but they really never understand to the point of an individual who's safe and who's not. And then the telematics technology was invented, and it started as a plug-in device into cars to monitor how fast someone went and how fast they turned. But really, that's only kind of a data gathering. What's changed in State Farm, for example, is one of our customers, State Farm's program actually gives feedback to the driver after every trip, which is, you know, the core of our technology, is the ability to, number one, identify areas where you have unsafe behavior, but really more important, give the feedback to individuals and provide incentives in that. Another company here in Massachusetts that is using that approach is Plymouth Rock, and they have a program called Road Rewards. And I have it. I worked there at the time when the program was created, and it changed my driving, I will tell you personally, because it gave incentives. It gives incentives now for drivers that essentially exhibit safe behavior. It looks at essentially speeding, hard braking, acceleration, all those elements, but it also looks at phone distraction. And then every few days, you get points based on your driving. Mm-hmm. And in this case, you can cash those points in for movie tickets. You can cash them in for Starbucks gift cards or Amazon gift cards. So now you have an incentive to pull you away from that. And I think what the insurance industry is doing is commendable, because essentially you're building another dimension to this problem, where enforcement is incredibly important, education is incredibly important, and the infrastructure, but also incentives. And I think that the way to combat the behavioral change element that Jay mentioned is you need to also have really strong incentives. And the insurance industry obviously has that, because if you get into an accident, it's,
yes,
you know, they're paying.
They want you to pay attention. Now, I have on my phone currently, and I discussed this with Emily the last time we talked, is one of those apps that just shuts off everything while you're in the car. It can tell if the car is moving. That's not as sophisticated as what you're talking about, but I don't get anything till I get out of the car. Or if I'm in the car and I'm a passenger, I can hit it and say, I am not driving. So that's a kind of forced intervention. But Jay, what I wanted to talk to you about is that this intervention that you're talking about from a human standpoint, and Emily too, you can weigh in on this, is really quite powerful if you have a combination of what Ryan is talking about. So it's a bottom line issue for some people. In Massachusetts, that's no joke. Insurance prices are high. I want to mention before you say something, Jay, that in the current law that we just passed, it takes a minute before you get to the punishment that your insurance rates go up, which I have commented on. I think it should happen right away. So
right.
I know
hopefully
that's not what you would want, Emily.
Well into the future. Hopefully people will stop after the first offense, or even, you know, realize March 31st, you could get a ticket and behavior will change. We tried pushing it to the second offense, but they insisted that it stays on the third. But hopefully people will see that if they do violate the law a third
time, you
gotta
pay for it.
They will pay for it.
In a different way. All right, Jay, let's talk about this intervention and the power of it. I already told you we stopped my parents from doing it.
Yeah.
So how powerful? I know you have something planned coming up to really have parents and kids interacting.
Right. Now, bearing in mind that most road trips are single occupancy.
Yes.
Especially, you know, all during the work week. So the kids can get the parents
sometimes
on the weekends, but that's why these are all partial solutions, and the sum total of them, which was also the case around drunk driving. Designated driver was not a silver bullet. It was one component of a comprehensive national and local strategy around drunk driving prevention. I think in addition to the interventions by kids and adult
passengers
as well, there's actually a need for some basic education that we assume people have, and that they get that distracted driving is dangerous, and they tell pollsters that they get it. But in a deeper level, I don't think they do. For example, if you are cognitively distracted, your mind is on something else, you could be staring straight down the road and you won't see a red light or a pedestrian coming in front of you, even though the signal of the light transmitted to your eye will register on the retina, but it won't be transferred to and acted on in the right section of the brain. So you have situational blindness. Mm-hmm. You also have what's called tunnel vision. When you're very distracted cognitively, looking straight down the road, you stop scanning left and right. So if something is about to come into your peripheral vision, you will not see it because you're no longer scanning. And that's why the message is scan for surprises, expect the unexpected. You have to maintain situational awareness, which is not a concept that's yet very prominent in the road safety field. It is in sports. Tom Brady is a genius at situational awareness, and Belichick taught him that. Likewise, first responders. When you're going through red lights because you're driving a fire engine or an ambulance, et cetera. But even in operating rooms where you have a group working together around the patient, it's crucial. But we don't talk about situational awareness in road safety, and there has to be easy language about it. That's why we talk about scanning for surprises and expect the unexpected. We don't talk about maintain your situational awareness.
Well, what I also learned from just having conversations with people like Emily is that even if you stop at a red light and you think, okay, well, I have a pause here. I'm not moving. I can sort of check something now. It's actually still distracting. And that wasn't entirely clear, Emily, until I talked with you. So I don't do that anymore. I thought that was safe. I don't do that. But I'm going to tell you something that's tough. I say to the Uber driver, I'm sorry, I don't want you talking on the phone. And I get an attitude. So this is Jay Winston, Ryan McMahon, Emily Stein. This ain't easy to be the interventionist.
And you're going to get a low Uber rating besides.
Oh, exactly. That's what I'm saying. So, I mean, it's more than a notion.
Oh, yeah.
And one guy I just said, you know, at this point, it's against the law. Stop. It's tough.
It is tough.
It's tough. Yeah. And the law does help. And this is something, if we switch to the kids, you know, the language we're going to teach the kids is that non-confrontational bystander intervention language. So you use the I statements. I feel scared when you fill in the blank. And I think it's hard for me to use that. It's we're not used to using this language all the time, but it's not only great for kids when speaking up to an adult driver, but we could use it with the Uber driver, we could use it with a friend, and it shows kind of this level of respect. And research has shown that people respond really well to that, but it's still not easy.
That's my guest, Emily Stein, president of Safe Roads Alliance. All right. So when can we expect to see the beginnings of the campaign, Jay Winston, the new one?
In April. And there'll be a big initial emphasis on social media. Mm-hmm. And Quincy Jones is going to help us mobilize
the music industry,
the artists behind it. And he'll participate himself. And we'll be developing an outreach both to parents and to kids separately. So a big social media push. We want to pursue not only media, but also community mobilization. And so we want to create materials that local advocacy groups can use to create visibility within their own towns. So it'll be a combination.
I want to play a clip from a young man who actually was in the room with somebody who was devastated by distracted driving, ended up paralyzed, parents were killed. And just to hear what he had to say after witnessing this and then come back to you. This is a reaction from a teen who spoke with this young woman who was very much affected by a distracted driver.
I can assure you on my drive home right now, I'm not going to use my phone and drive, and I'm not going to do it when I go to work tomorrow and the next day after that until, you know, it becomes a habit and that just doesn't happen.
Now, I want to believe him, but what we know from the data is that that kind of lasts for a short period of time. What is one step that somebody could take by listening to this to just sort of keep that going for a moment? I mean, just, you know, you said it to yourself, you're not going to do it, and then you sort of slip back. Do any of you have a suggestion?
Well, I think that's where technology can come in a big way.
Right? Yeah, I mean, my recommendation is we have an app that's available right now that is called Safest Driver in the App Store. If you download it, you'll be able to see your own data on how you're driving. I mean, it's one of those things that's actually shocking. It happens in the background. You don't necessarily realize how much you're picking up your phone. I think the best advice is to put your phone out of reach. It's very hard to do that for individuals. So this is an interim step, I think, that to identify, to get individuals to download an app, understand how their own driving is, and distracted driving is part of it, understanding speeding on local roads, how your actual driving impacts risk. And this would be a great step that individuals can take. And I can tell you that we have great success stories. So one of our most prominent customers, actually in South Africa, this company, Discovery Insure, they've reduced roadway fatalities by 60% for their customers versus the population at large.
Wow.
And partially that's due to the ability to give feedback and incentives to individuals. And I think both of those things are important because sometimes, and I think, Emily, this goes to the campaign that you're working on at the same time, which I think is brilliant, is the feedback is one of those items that is really important that people get, you know, you're just not going to get stopped by law enforcement enough for that to ingrain quickly enough to help solve the problem. So these are great steps along the way.
Now, Jay, I know that you think, Emily, I know this will be hard for you to hear, that there's going to have to be secondary legislation of a wide nature, you know, uniformly across the country in the end to stop this.
Well, there's either going to have to be national legislation or much stronger local state level legislation, because we're really at the earliest stages, frankly, on the legislative front. In fact, Canada is far ahead of us. And in Canada today, depending upon the province, you can have a fine of $1,000 for on a first offense for distracted driving. You can also, in another province, you'll have your driving privileges lifted on the spot. The police officer will actually take your driver's license away, and it's gone for 3 days. You have a temporary license for 48 hours so you can get home and you can get your affairs in order. And then you have a 3-day suspension, and you've got to show up at a government office to reactivate your license. It's a 7-day suspension
Wow.
for a second offense and 30-day for a third, and then you lose your license permanently. You know, in California today, if what I read the other day is correct, the fine is somewhere, it's under $100 for a first offense. Now, what is that saying to you? Yes, it's against the law. It's not much. And until we change the culture, we won't have the tough laws, we won't have the tough fines, and we won't have the tough mobilization of communities. It comes down to culture change in the end.
Emily, you get the last word on this day that we officially kick off our attempt to start getting people to pay attention.
I think our main goal is just to get everybody to realize what's at stake and to remember that, you know, especially if your kids are in the backseat, they are watching you and they will become distracted drivers. So for your kids, for your family, for your coworkers, just get there safely. And, you know, we welcome anybody's help in helping to spread the message.
All right. Thank you all for joining me.
Thank you.
Jay Winston is the Associate Dean for Health Communications at the Harvard T.H. Chan School of Public Health. Emily Stein is the President of Safe Roads Alliance. And Ryan McMahon is the Vice President of Insurance and Government Affairs at Cambridge Mobile Telematics, a smartphone telematics analytics provider. Coming up, artist Jacob Lawrence painted a total of 10 narrative series over the course of his career. His seventh, The American Struggle, was the only one to be broken up, eventually ending up in various collections. Over 50 years later, the striking historical chronicle has been reunited for the first time at Salem's Peabody Essex Museum to tell Americans' collective history and eternal pursuit of freedom. That's next. This is Under the Radar with Callie Crossley. I'm Callie Crossley.